Is the law the opposite of the gospel? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Is the Law Bad? Some Myths About God's Law. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read about Tim Wood's journey from many different Christian confessions to the sound and seamless theology of the Lutheran Confession, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
We'll restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders.
The gospel is not only the message that the church takes to the world. The gospel is the source of the church's very existence.
People have the attention span of hummingbirds on cocaine. It's got to feel good right now. And to some degree, that's the way we also think about church.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
It's one of those debates that has been with us for, well, now the better part of 40 years, right? Since Roe v. Wade and before, if we think carefully enough about it, a debate that many people considered settled in 1973 when the Supreme Court said that the unborn are not worthy of protection. This is what they really said. The unborn are not worthy of protection under the Constitution or the laws by the courts or anyone else. In the United States, and it makes no difference whether it's a first trimester unborn or whether it's a third trimester unborn, they're not worthy of protection. That's what they said. But it didn't settle the debate. And, well, thank God, pro-lifers continue to keep the debate alive. And hopefully it can get settled in the other direction someday, if not in law, then perhaps in the minds and the hearts of the American people. We're going to begin a four-part weekly series on equipping pro-life Christians. Today we're going to clarify this long debate with Scott Klusendorf of the Life Training Institute. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. It's Monday afternoon. It's the 30th of March. A little later in our program, we'll listen to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. Marjorie Dannensfelder will be our guest from the Susan B. Anthony list. We'll talk with her about President Obama's nominee to head White House Office of Legal Counsel. Many are saying bad choice, backward step, especially for those who believe in the protection of life. Dr. James Nestegen is going to join us. He's Professor Emeritus of Church History at Luther Seminary. We've been wanting to talk about this new report on human sexuality issued by a task force of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America for a long time. Very difficult to get someone to talk to us from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America about that issue. They'll say yes, and then about a week later, they'll say no. So we'll talk to Dr. James Nestegen in about the last 40 minutes of Issues Etc. today. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 1-877-623-6943, or you can reach us via email as well, right here in the studio with questions or comments, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest, president of Life Training Institute, and he's author of the brand new book titled The Case for Life. Scott, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, we hear a lot about women's rights, the Constitution, women's health, all these things that enter into the life debate. Do you think that, for the most part, while well-intentioned from the pro-life side, things are still a little unclear as to what the debate is really about?
I think it's a lot unclear, not only on the other side, but on our side. And the reason is people are not focusing in on the one question that truly matters. Let's take one of those things you just brought up a moment ago, women's rights. Would anyone argue that women should have the right to kill a toddler? Well, of course, the answer is no, because everyone that has a functioning conscience would say to us, you can't kill that toddler because that toddler's a human being, which, of course, then raises this question. How does the unborn differ from that toddler? If the toddler is a human, and if it can be shown the unborn is also a human, then this debate is not about choice and who decides or women's rights or trusting people to make their own personal decisions. It's about one question, what is the unborn? And you've got to answer that question before we start talking about rights or forcing one's view, or privacy, choice, trust, or a host of other things that, quite frankly, are just distractions from the real question.
All right, then. I want to come back to that in just a moment. But what we're hearing a lot lately, especially from elected officials, including President Obama, who has been rather candid in his views about the life issue, he likes to refer to this as a morally complex issue. Is the issue of protecting the unborn morally complex?
Well, it's funny. If he really believes it's morally complex, that hasn't stopped him from acting decisively to strip unborn humans of virtually any rights they might have left, and also to force taxpayers to be complicit in their destruction. But he's just wrong that it's a complex issue. Now, I need to clarify this, Todd. In saying that abortion, embryonic stem cell research are not morally complex issues, I'm not suggesting there's no psychological complexity involved. Let's take the issue of abortion, for example. If you and I learn of a 14-year-old girl who's pregnant, and we learn that her parents are going to throw her out of the house because she's pregnant. We learn that her boyfriend is going to dump her, that she's going to lose the chance to go to college and earn good money. We certainly feel sympathy for her. Who wouldn't? And rightfully so. But it doesn't follow that because we feel sympathy for her, there's no correct way to proceed morally. And it's the moral question that I contend is not at all complex. It comes down to the issue, what is the unborn? And the way your listeners can work through this with people is to simply ask themselves, are any of the arguments I'm hearing right now that are being offered as a defense of abortion good enough to justify killing a toddler? If the answer is no, then the person making those arguments in favor of abortion is assuming something about the unborn that they're not assuming about the toddler. And what they're assuming is that the unborn are not human like the toddler. But that's the very question we need to resolve. Is the unborn human like you and I, like a toddler, like a newborn that we all admit are members of the human family? You first have to answer the question, what is the unborn, before we can answer the question, can we kill the unborn?
So what rights and protections do the unborn enjoy in America today?
None. Basically, when it comes to abortion, for example, the unborn have a right to life if and only if their mothers agree to it. Through all 9 months of pregnancy, abortion is legally permitted. Now, as soon as I say that, people say, no way, that can't be. Well, let me give you a couple of ways to go about this. The first is to take a look at Roe versus Wade and its companion case, Doe versus Bolton, both handed down in 1973. Those cases together establish a couple of important things. Number one, Roe versus Wade establishes that a woman may have an abortion through any time in the pregnancy if it is needed to assist her, quote, health. Then the companion case, Doe versus Bolton, went on to define health so broadly you can drive a Mack truck through it. Psychological concerns apply to health. Economic concerns apply to health. Family concerns. And what we end up with, Todd, is a situation where, though people will say there aren't many third trimester abortions that happen, which is true, the real question here is, what is allowable by law? And what's allowable by law is any abortion that's needed to support the woman's, quote, health, unquote. And because that definition is so broad, you end up with a situation where abortions are legal through all 9 months of pregnancy.
We asked before about the moral complexity of this debate. What about the medical, the embryological, the scientific end of this? Is that a complex or a murky question on the identity of the embryo either?
No, it's not. In fact, that is the thing that is most clear to anybody who bothers to crack open an embryology textbook or even a basic biology book. It's very clear that from the earliest stages of development, the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. Now, I need to unpack that. What I mean by distinct is it's not part of the mother. The new human entity is not part of her body. It's not simply joined with her. It resides in her, but it is not part of her. It's certainly a living entity because dead things don't grow, and the embryo is growing. It is taking nutrition. It is bringing up bodily systems and then tearing them down to make way for new, more developed ones. So clearly, this embryo is not dead. And when we say it's a whole living member of the human family, we mean that even though it is small, even though it is not developed to the extent that it will be one day as it matures, it is nevertheless very different from a skin cell or a sperm and egg cell that are merely part of another human being. Rather, the embryo is already a whole living organism functioning the way that all human organisms do, developing, growing, and directing that development internally, meaning the embryo is directing its own internal development. That's not happening from the outside.
All right, you've got about a minute before we take this break. You've mentioned the toddler a couple times, and someone says, well, how can you equate the developing embryo with a full-grown, born, and walking about toddler? Why can you do this, and why must we do this?
We don't equate the toddler with the embryo to make the case that the embryo is human like the toddler. We appeal to science to do that. Rather, I trot out a toddler to show people that the issue is not choice or privacy or trusting people to make their own personal decisions, because if we were talking about killing toddlers, no one would argue that way. They only argue that way when we're talking about the unborn, which means the real issue we first need to resolve before we talk about choice, privacy, or trusting women, for example, we need to resolve the question, what is the unborn? That question has to be answered before we can deal with the issue, can we kill the unborn?
When we come back from this break, we're going to let Scott make the case. That's, after all, what this series with him is really all about, equipping you, the pro-life Christian, beginning with clarification of the debate, who is the unborn? Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. When we come back, we'll let him make the case about who the unborn is or isn't. He's author of a brand new book titled The Case for Life. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Monday afternoon, March the 30th. You're listening to Issues Etc. Our call-in number, 1-877-622-3693, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel, and washed it away as if it wasn't real.
We've interviewed four members of the President's Council on Bioethics since President Obama announced his decision to allow federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. Dr. Robert George.
In all the talk about curing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and so forth, who shuffled off the stage is the victim, the tiny embryonic human being who will now be sacrificed, treated as disposable research material.
Dr. Gilbert Mylander.
Science itself always has moral agendas at work. It's not as if it's value-free. If we suppose that it's entirely neutral with respect to moral questions, it's not.
Dr. William Hurlbut.
Bottom line is whether we as a society are going to endorse the instrumental use of human life at its earliest stages in scientific research.
And Dr. Leon Cass.
He simply said, I think this is the right thing to do. I respect your opinion, but there was no argument other than cures will be forthcoming. That's an argument that only shows a very shallow understanding of the moral question.
Defending life from beginning to end. Issues, etc.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back, Scott Murley, Larry Peterson, Bruce Marthaler, Luke Edwards, Gene Hartling, the Reverend Dr. Andrew Doss, Amy Shanefield, Daniel Eggold, James Badalski, and David Reed. Thanks for your support.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our communities, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Scott Klusendorf is our guest, making the case for the identity of the unborn, clarifying the debate, part one of a four-part weekly series with him on equipping pro-life Christians. Our call-in number on this Monday afternoon, the 30th of March, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. All right, Scott, make the case, how you would make the case with someone who is either skeptical or ignorant or perhaps adamantly opposed to the notion that the unborn should be classified in any sense as a full member of the human species, a human being.
Again, the first thing to do is to simplify the issue by showing that the debate is not about choice and these other issues people bring up. It's about what is the unborn. And the reason we know that, nobody would advocate killing toddlers in the name of choice. They only advocate killing fetuses under that guise. So we want to make it clear that the real issue is the unborn a human being like us? To make the case that the unborn are human, we're going to appeal to the science of embryology, as we discussed before the break. We're going to make the case, and this can be done very quickly in a simple sentence, so all of your listeners can be assured you don't need to have a PhD in biology to do what I'm about to do. You simply summarize what the science of embryology teaches, and that science is summarized as follows. Each of us, from the very beginning, was a distinct, living, and whole member of the human species. Now, those are the scientific truths that are beyond dispute when you actually look at the scientific literature. There's very little debate on them, and the debate that's taking place, in my opinion, is not being done by people who are skilled in the science of embryology. It's by others who wish to discredit the humanity of the unborn, and the way I respond to them is simply say, hey, look, I've got my sources here. If you've got better sources, I'm willing to hear them. But in the absence of your stronger evidence, please explain to me why it's not true that the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. After all, they come from human parents. After all, they're living, and they're not like parts of a body of another person, like skin cells. They are themselves distinct, whole living organism. That's the scientific fact. Now, the next part gets a little more tricky for some people because you will get those who will look you in the eye and say, okay, I'll concede that the unborn are human beings biologically, but they're not yet persons. Now, this takes a little bit of skill to navigate, but again, it's not difficult. Notice who's making the claim here. The person who says the unborn are human but not persons has just made the claim that there can be such a thing as a human that's not a person. That means the critic making that claim bears the burden of proof. He needs to demonstrate to us why we should believe there can be such a thing as a human that's not a person. In fact, Todd, I don't know. Have you ever met a human being that wasn't a person? I suppose some of our listeners with teenagers might say yes. But beyond that, seriously, we've never met anyone that it was a human being that we would say, oh, well, they're human, but they're not a person. This personhood category has been developed to set aside one class of human beings that can be killed from another class that can't be. It's a totally arbitrary and ad hoc designation. If you get an answer at all when you ask somebody, well, what's the difference between the unborn that is not a person and others that you say are persons, if they venture an answer at all, they'll say the following. Well, the unborn don't count because they're too small. They're the wrong level of development, they're in the wrong environment or location, and their degree of dependency is too much. That's why they don't count. And as we've talked about many times on this show before, the simple acronym SLED that Stephen Schwartz initially came up with helps us show that these differences are not morally relevant. So again, just to bring us to the point where we are now, we scientifically argue the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. And then philosophically, we're now going to argue that the four differences between the embryo we once were and the adults we are today are not significant differences such that we can say it would have been okay to kill you then, but not now. Size, there's your S in that SLED acronym. We were the size of a dot at the end of a sentence. Nobody disputes that. We were indeed small. But since when does body size give us the right to life? We don't think men who are generally larger than women have a greater right to life than women. We don't think Shaquille O'Neal, the 7'2" basketball star, has a greater right to life than all of us. Being taller and being bigger is nice, but it does not bestow on one value as a matter of principle. The same can be said with the level of development. Yes, by the way, there's your L in that acronym. Yes, we were less developed as embryos than we are today, but 2-year-olds are less developed than 14-year-olds. We don't think 2-year-olds have less of a right to life. We don't think that teenagers who are less developed than their parents, both physically and intellectually, which of course would come as a shock to all of the kids, but the truth is their parents don't get a greater right to life simply because they're more developed. Environment, there's your E in that SLED acronym. We were once in the womb, now we're out. But where we are has no bearing on who we are. When we walk from our cars to our homes or from the church parking lot into the sanctuary, we don't stop being who we are simply because we change location. If that's true, a journey of 8 inches down the birth canal doesn't change the fetus from non-human to human. And finally, degree of dependency. While it's true we depended on our mothers for survival, that was not a good reason for killing us. Conjoined twins depend on each other's bodily organs. We don't think they have no. We don't think they forfeit their right to life simply because they do. I don't know if you saw this, Todd, but did you happen to see in November the television special? I think it was on nationally about the two girls. They're now teenagers who are joined literally at the hip. You look at them and you see one set of legs. You see then two body trunks begin to split off, and they've got two sets of shoulders and two heads. These two girls are now 17, and oh, by the way, they're driving, and it was quite humorous to listen to them talk about how one might be hungry for a cheeseburger, the other one is hungry for broccoli. How do they resolve that? The bottom line is they share bodily organs, and if we're going to argue they have no right to life until they can live independent of another human being, well, then those two girls forfeit their right to life, as does the unborn who depends on its mother for survival. So you can see there's only four differences: size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency, think SLED. Those are the only four differences, and not one of them justifies killing you at that earlier stage of development.
Well, finally then, I'd like you to take a minute or two to respond to this finally. Someone is going to say, laying aside the issue of personhood, I think you're right, that term has been arbitrarily invented in order to justify the killing of human beings. But someone might say the term human being, it's too slippery. It's a metaphysical, philosophical, religious term. How do you respond?
Well, that would not only call into question the unborn's humanity, it would call in the humanity of the person making the claim. I mean, if human being can't be defined, I guess we don't know that the critic making that claim is a human being either. But that's simply false. Look, even Peter Singer, who is an adamant defender not only of abortion, not only of embryonic stem cell research and cloning, but also infanticide, meaning killing babies after they're born, makes it very clear that we know and can know with precision what a human being is. Wayne Sumner says the same thing, a philosopher who defends abortion rights. Marianne Warren, another abortion choice philosopher, does not dispute that we can know when a human being comes into existence. She will, of course, try to disqualify certain human beings from having a right to life based on their alleged lack of personhood. But this idea that we can't know what a human being is simply silly. It ends up reducing us to the point where we can't make distinctions of anything. I mean, do we really believe, for example, that a man who kills the family dog to feed a starving son in a famine is no different than one who would kill the son to feed the dog? I mean, if we can't define one kind of thing from another, a human being from any other living thing, we end up with some really absurd ethics.
Next week, when we talk with you, we're going to be talking about the foundations for the debate, in particular, the ground rules that you think ought to prevail in this debate. What do we have in store for us with about 30 seconds?
We're going to talk about the assumptions people bring to the debate. One of the things I talk about in the Case for Life is how people bring to the abortion debate all kinds of prior worldview assumptions that are unspoken. And what tends to happen is the Christian is forced to defend every one of his starting points, every one of his assumptions, but the secularist gets a free pass as if he doesn't have any. And the reality is both sides bring prior worldview commitments to this debate, And we should not assume that one side, the secular side, should get free rein, while those of us who bring a religious worldview to the debate somehow must be censored in the public square.
Folks, you can purchase Scott Klusendorf's brand new book, The Case for Life, at the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. When you buy it online, you can also help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Look for Scott's book, The Case for Life. You can buy it right there and help support Issues Etc. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute and author of this brand new book, The Case for Life. Scott, I look forward to next week's conversation.
Thank you, Todd. Always a joy to be with you.
It's very easy when you're debating any subject to, it's not a matter of losing control. It's just a matter of becoming distracted by things that really aren't the point of the debate. When you are debating any subject, be it weighty or trivial, it's easy to let the point migrate around and to get carried far afield. Well, this debate is a matter of life and death. It's a matter of the human being's life, the human being's death. And we really can't afford, as pro-life Christians, to allow the point, the debate, the subject, to migrate around. We need to stay on point. And the point is, who is the unborn? And as long as we stay centered there, then everyone, if they're honest, on either side of the debate, will be able to take their stand honestly, and we'll see, really see, where everyone finally stands on the protection of the unborn human being. When we come back, we're going to be listening to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Paul Preuss, Andrew Farmer, Scott Holabeck, Al Geistart, William Ebel Jr., Bethany Preuss, Suzanne Zobel, Walter Pierce, Ron Howard, and Abby Albrecht. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Notre Dame University is engulfed in a scandalous controversy. This Catholic institution of higher learning is having President Obama speak at their commencement in May. And they're giving the most pro-abortion president in the history of our nation an honorary law degree. These actions are to be expected from many secular universities, but Notre Dame is spitting in the face of the Catholic doctrine they're supposed to emulate. There's been a huge outpouring of protest from Catholics and pro-lifers. Notre Dame's president, Father John Jenkins, says the honor of hosting a president outweighs the appearance of supporting his pro-abortion agenda. Please contact him and request he rescind the invitation by visiting today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. Help us stand up for the babies.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Here are a few of the features of the new Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Study notes, application notes, and prayers from a uniquely Lutheran perspective, 120 maps, charts, and diagrams. You'll find law and gospel application notes, center column references, and quotes from the Church Fathers. Check out the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.